Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. I'm your host, Adam Horner. With 30 years in the industry, including over a decade as a CTO, I have coached and mentored more than 100 engineers and tech leaders. This podcast covers crucial topics for CTOs, providing insights, strategies, and practical advice to help you build and refine your own playbook to excel in your role. In this episode, I'm covering the topic of communication, something that's fairly important to CTOs, in fact, to all leaders, but is often assumed to be as something that we can all do. I'll be covering communication audiences, the mediums through which we communicate, the types of communication that we have, listening, one of the crucial parts of communication, and a few other topics, finishing up with my rough playbook for CTOs for communication. I want to start with a bit of a story. It was many years ago that I was working for a consultancy who in turn were a subcontractor to one of the large prime contractors in the UK. We're talking about a consultancy organization that has hundreds of thousands of employees. And one morning I was in the office and was talking to some of my colleagues that I was working with who worked for this prime contractor. And they had received a fairly important looking email with a video in it, which is quite unusual at the time. And they started watching the video and they didn't seem to mind that I was standing around, was able to watch it at the time. It started off with a relatively young chap in a suit standing in front of a huge piece of hardware that this company was one of the things that they built on a sort of a fairly sunny day. And he started off with this big smile and enthusiastic voice. And he said something along the lines of, "Today, we're announcing 5 changes to divisions, including 2 departmental mergers." And he went on to describe in very over-the-top enthusiastic words these changes that were happening. And I was just looking around and seeing all these people who work for this organization, head in hands, really frustrated, despondent. A couple of even slammed their laptops and wandered out. And at the time, I was a little bit confused as to what was going on. But one thing I could certainly tell straight away was that there was a real mismatch between sort of the non-verbal cues and what these people were actually hearing and understanding from this conversation. Clearly, it was an impactful talk. Clearly, people were affected by it. And it was a demonstration of how sort of tone deaf some communication can be. So let's start off by sort of breaking down some of the things that happened in that talk and see if we can understand what it was and then unpack some of the different areas in which we need to be aware of as CTOs, as we communicate, to see if we can learn from this example of not great communication. So let's talk about the first one first, sort of this mismatch between the non-verbal cues. And I think it's something that a lot of tech leaders don't really understand brilliantly. So what are the non-verbal cues that we need to be looking at? The most obvious one that people talk about is body language. How does your physical movements match or not match to the words that you're saying? Is your body language so extravagant that it's distracting? How about the eye contact? Is the person giving the communication making clear, constant eye contact, or are they constantly shifting away and looking at something else? If there's, again, a mismatch between the kinds of communication and the kind of eye contact you get with the person talking, it can be either distracting, off-putting, or sometimes just confusing, as can the tone. In this case, the tone was completely upbeat, but the content was quite impactful, quite important, and perhaps would have warranted a more serious, sober tone to go with it. Other non-verbal cues that we can have in communication include things like the graphics loaded, included, or used for demonstration. Does the tone of those graphics match the communication? And another thing that's becoming more important today as well is the background. Is somebody talking about some serious work topic and yet they have a tropical background behind them? Unless your work is to do with tropical backgrounds or being in the tropics, there's a mismatch between those two. And so again, do we need to make ourselves more aware of all the non-verbal cues? And I would say that yes, as engineering leaders, technology leaders, generally we do need to be more aware of it than we generally are. So what else is going along in this announcement on the video? So I think one of the other things that was fairly clear was the lack of empathy. The person giving the communication didn't really understand how it was going to be received. And I think that comes down to generally the organization as a whole not listening or not understanding the people who are being spoken to. And that probably comes from not seeking feedback, not looking for feedback. That was definitely something that I heard from the other folks who worked for that organization at the time. And another thing that they did was they had a sort of a one size fits all. Most of the people I worked with were working in software, and there were, you know, hundreds of them working in software. And yet this guy was stood in front of some great big piece of hardware. And so the mismatch was between, you know, what the guy is talking about and, you know, expecting that it would be relevant to all people who worked with the big hardware stuff. So let's dive into some of these particular topics then. So let's look at the audiences that we have first. So what are the different kinds of audience that we have as a technology leader in general that we're talking to? And I've got sort of six here, but there may well be more in your organization. So this isn't a definitive list, but what it does try and do is break down a different level of abstraction or technical detail that we might use in different environments. And I think it's important as a technology leader that we are dynamic and conscious of who our audience is. So probably the most abstract and the most business level is probably the board. When we're communicating with the board, we need to be clear from the point of view of the strategy, the topic, and the outcomes that are expected, and probably fairly low on the detail and on the implementation. Whereas next level down, our executive team or senior leadership team, whatever they're called, it's essentially the C-suite. There you will be talking about some operational aspects, but again, not technical, but on the business level, on the outcome level, on the financial orientation generally. And so if we go into too much technical detail in front of the executive team, most of the rest of the execs in an average organization are not technical. There are exceptions, of course. If you're working in a technical organization and the CEO is an ex-CTO, then sure, you can go into technical details. But for most executive teams, being too technical in that team is either going to leave them without an understanding of what you're talking about in the worst case, or without the empathy because you're not speaking in terms that they understand. Next level down tends to be the engineering leaders. So if you think of the exec team as our first team, the board as the team that we're reporting to, then the engineering leaders is the layer that typically are reporting to you as the CTO. And engineering leaders, clearly there you can be more technical in your communication. But I think the key thing with at this level is to drive the outcome rather than the method. And I think as you step up from being an engineering lead yourself to being the CTO, that's one of those things that we need to leave behind, is to leave behind the how and focus more on the what. Now, that's different when we're speaking to individual engineers, when we're either mentoring them, coaching them, talking through challenges, when we're in the trenches, you know, firefighting with engineers, then clearly we can get into the how. We can be trying to help solve problems and be direct. But at the same time, with all of these levels, we need to be listening as well. And it becomes really important at the levels, engineers, product teams, the rest of the business, when we're talking to people at these levels, we need to be very much in listening mode and hearing mode. So we want to try and listen first. But the main thing here is that we have different levels of abstraction of our audiences, and our language can range from technical to financial or to the business domain if it's neither of those two. And so being able to change our tone, our language, our focus based on the audience that we have, it's a fairly important skill to develop, and it just takes practice. In terms of knowing how well we're doing, searching for feedback is a fairly key way of doing that. So let's talk about listening then. And we end up with listening coming from various different ways and various different methods. We don't tend to get very good at listening as an engineer. We're learning, but when we tend to learn as an engineer, we tend to learn from the internet, from other people's code, from pull requests and comments on those kinds of things. Actively seeking feedback as an engineer is not a skill that we develop particularly well. So when we move up into the leadership, we need to learn how to get feedback, how to listen, how to be an active listener. Then there's many different ways that we can do that, and do that differently at different levels of abstraction. So let's start from the most details. When we're talking to individuals in one-to-ones, for example, which are a very important part of leadership communication, one-to-ones, it's important that we ask open-ended questions and use silence as a way to get the other person to speak to us, to talk to us. And then we need to be listening in such a way that we can ask follow-up questions. If we're asking and then waiting simply to get the next word in, to say our next thing, we're not really listening. And, you know, I've seen that go wrong in several different occasions. I've done that myself. Of course, when you're asking, I've asked questions to people and then not really listened to the answer. And then found myself thinking, I need to ask again because I didn't actually really listen to the question or to the answer to the question that I asked previously. And it doesn't feel great when you're on the other end of that, as we all know. And so making sure that we get that right can save a loss of face or an embarrassing situation. When we're in a team situation, listening is a little bit more different, but it follows the same rules. Open-ended questions are very good. But then we also need to take a mindset of speaking last. We, as a leader, can influence the way that people think and therefore cut off some of the feedback, communication, and opinions of people in the team if we speak first or give our opinion first or give our expected direction before listening to everybody else's feedback. And another trick is to watch and see who doesn't speak. And for those people who don't speak, encourage them to speak up. One of the good phrases that one of my teachers used is mediate, don't dictate. And the basic idea there is that you're trying to encourage the conversation between others rather than telling everybody else your opinion or what you want or what you think or how you expect it to be. When it comes to the larger group of people, listening becomes more difficult when we have a larger team and we're dealing with our leaders who in turn then deal with individual contributors. Listening at that level becomes a little bit harder. So one of the tools that I have used to good effect in the past is survey tools and anonymous feedback tools. The idea being that you make it safe and expected for people to provide information and to ask tough questions. And in some cases, ask those questions in an anonymous way, giving people the opportunity to speak up even when maybe they wouldn't do if they didn't expect to be covered by an anonymity. So there's a few tools that are available out there to do that. A lot of people have mentioned to me Culture Amp. There's a local Swedish team called Winning Temp, which does something similar. There are other tools out there, but essentially being able to get the temperature of the organization in terms of how they're feeling and thinking in certain metrics, using those regularly, using the feedback and training your team leaders to use the same thing is important. And most of those tools have an anonymous feedback section in there. So listening at all those different levels is hard, but it's something, again, it's something you can practice and something you learn how to do by doing it. And understanding that listening is different at different levels in terms of the different sizes of group that you're speaking to. So another example of communication that I had slightly later on in my career that was one of those ones that was instructive for me was when I was sitting alongside another team. I was in an adjacent team to this, and the tech leader for that team made a presentation. It was quite a large team, about 15 people in all, so bigger than you'd expect it to be. But he was a relatively new joiner to the organization. And I remember him basically standing up, pulling up a slide and saying, right, team, I need you to do A, step one, step two, step three, then B, I need us to achieve step four, step five, and step six. And then that will lead to this. I remember him just basically standing up and dictating his whole load of steps he expected everybody else to just go and do. And I remember people sitting in the room just being a little bit, uncomfortable, nonplussed by this. And I sort of was confused about it myself. I was like, well, why is this person expecting everybody to just do what he says, number one? And number two, how does he think that's actually going to lead to people being able to use their own creativity, problem solving? And does this person actually understand all the issues and challenges there are to be faced? And I wasn't certain. And one of the things I realized later on was that this leader, a new leader, was expecting himself to be the best technically. And he was being very, very directive, clearly, but he was also bringing in expectations from his previous organization. He was bringing in basically the culture from his previous organization, expecting it to land cleanly and easily when he'd changed jobs, changed organizations, in fact, changed industries as well, and it didn't. So what are sort of the areas then that we can think about in terms of how that went wrong and how we could perhaps do that better at another time? And I think one of the most important things was using the right meeting for the right thing. So if you have a certain outcome or desire from any kind of communication, figuring out what that is and then setting up your communication to get that output in the best possible way is clearly going to be a good way to do it. But that takes some thought and some preparation before communication to try and get that right. So one of the things a lot of us use communications for, especially meetings for, is some sort of status update. If we get a status update, whether that's a stand-up, whether it is a retrospective, whether it is an all-hands, delivering status soliciting status is something that is often inefficient in the way that it's done. And what I generally suggest to most people I work with is to think about status as being as much as possible asynchronous when you're gathering it, but when you're delivering important status, to broadcast it effectively. Now, broadcasting could be something like gathering everybody together in all hands and saying the same news to the same people at the same time to ensure that there's no miscommunication, to be able to get feedback directly in that session and go from there. In other cases where it's just a simple, straightforward, everybody needs to know this and I'm not, you know, the feedback isn't that important, broadcast may be quite literally broadcast, so recording a video and then allowing everybody to watch it in their own time and then providing feedback method in another way. Status updates in a team level, and that includes a lot of the sort of scrum ceremonies, I find are not as efficient as they could be if you think about using systemic communication as well. And I'll come on to systemic communication in a moment, but that basically means using systems to communicate. It's also very inefficient to use one-to-ones for status updates on work. There are much more efficient and quicker ways to get that feedback, normally asynchronously, so via an asynchronous chat platform or via a system, a workflow system, to get that status rather than using, you know, FaceTime, conversation time, one-to-one to do that. When it comes to other goals of meetings, so like, for example, that you want to communicate a done decision or a done change, the most important thing from my perspective is to think about who the audience is. If we go back to this big change that we had, I was talking about at the beginning from the prime contractor, they'd got the audience mostly right because it went out to the whole of the division. But maybe if they tuned the particular parts of the decision to the right audience, smaller audiences, it might have landed better than it did. So choosing the audience for the scope of the change or the decision that you're communicating is important. If you go too narrow, you'll need to repeat it too many times. If you go too wide, it may not be relevant or aspects of the communication might not land brilliantly with everybody in there. And there's often a trade-off in this decision. It's rarely an easy cut and dried, especially in larger organizations, as to how you do that. Now, the other kind of meeting and communication we often have is to get an agreement, to get to a decision. And a lot of the time I see meetings where people go in and the very first thing that happens is a discussion of the challenge and the problem itself. And sometimes that's very one-sided, where there's one person talking through the challenge that some people know about and some people don't. And that time is best taken up by people reading up on their own beforehand. Now, when you're a small team and you're all working on the same things, the amount of context delivery time needed can be very small because you're all fully aware of all the context. For larger teams, larger organizations, that can often be best done by pre-reading and reading about the challenge beforehand on which the decision is needed to be made. And for that, having a really good agenda. I worked in one organization where people would literally decline meetings, unless the meeting had an agenda. And it really forced people to think about what pre-reading was required, what context was required, and for the meeting to really focus around the decision itself rather than the delivery of the background information or bringing people up to date on the context that was needed for it. So if you can focus meetings around getting to an agreement or getting to a decision on the decision itself and the debate on the pros and cons, you know, weighting the different aspects of it, rather than just filling people in on context, a lot of time can be saved and the meeting itself becomes much higher value. And people appreciate that. People really appreciate it when they have a good setup to a meeting. So I spoke very briefly there about systemic communication. So let me go through all the different kind of mediums that I see for communication. A medium here is just the way in which we communicate, the mechanism that we use to communicate. And the first few are fairly obvious and straightforward, and a lot of people stop at the end of this list. And those are in-person presentations, so some normally slides or somebody on stage talking. Then we have chat, whether that's chat apps like Slack and Teams, etc. We have email, it speaks for itself, it's one of the oldest digital communication mechanisms there are. And then documentation. And that could be, you know, Microsoft Word, Google Docs, Confluence, Notion, all these different platforms for generating documentation and, you know, writing documentation. And most people kind of stop there in terms of thinking about the different mediums for communication. In-person conversations, of course, there's a wide range from, you know, one-to-ones all the way through to group conversations, all the way through to teams having lunch together. In-person conversations are as wide and as broad as anything, and I'm not going to go into any detail on that at all. But I do want to cover some of the other mediums of communication that are often overlooked but can be really important, especially in engineering. So some of the key ones that I think of are workflow communication. So that could be Jira, it could be linear, it could be pull requests and GitHub issues. These kinds of tickets where information is placed, put, decisions are made upon them, status updates are put onto them, and the aggregation of status becomes quite an important aspect. A whole bunch of tickets together form a release or a feature, and this context about that can be really quite impactful around the organization. And lots of plans can be made around it, and it's often communicated through the workflow platform. So it's a really important source of communication. A lot of engineers think about these kinds of ticketing systems as being a burden to their work or a byproduct of what they need to do. However, the output of those workflow systems is crucial for planning, for status updates, often for things as important as budgets, release timelines, planning marketing, sometimes which has quite a big spend behind it. And so systemic communication through workflow tools is often overlooked, but really, really important. And the same goes for management type of workflow tools as well. So that could be to-do systems and project management systems like Asana and Monday and other project management platforms often used outside of engineering, but for non-engineering projects. And quite often I find organizations that have this debate between, do we use a project management system? Do we use an engineering workflow system? How do we combine them together? Do we integrate them, et cetera? And again, that's an area where friction can come into communication between the different platforms, between the different styles of system-level communication, or as I call it, systemic communication. Now, there are a few other forms of systemic communication that are important in engineering as well. There is the code itself. And we don't often think of code as being communication because it creates the product. But we spend a lot of our time as engineers reading code. Well, if we're reading it, we're reading communication. So the code itself is a language, is a way of communicating intent, purpose, outcome, expectation. And so therefore, having clear code and clear structure is an important part of the communication. And the way that puts together coding guidelines, et cetera, really quite important as far as communication for the CTO goes and overseeing it and how well it's run. And that covers all sorts of things like PRs, comments on PRs and pull requests. PRs are pull requests. Comments on those, feedback upon those, decisions based upon them. And it also covers things like request for comments or architectural decision records, which are often put in the code base, but are written as, you know, legible documents. So these kinds of communication are also critically important. So then we have a few others as well. So the visual medium of communication, which is another important one, especially for people like the design teams, anybody who's building UI, anybody who's creating video, whether it's part of the product or whether it's something you use internally as part of your business. And then there's the visual aspects of things like slides, diagrams, designs. We often talk about there being a visual language of an organization. Well, clearly, if it's language, it's communication. The tone of visual graphics should match the tone of written and spoken word as well. So lots of different mediums for us as CTOs to be aware of. The ones that everybody should be aware of, and then the ones that are specific or more concentrated for engineering in terms of the impact that they have. And sometimes we can see there's quite a disparity between the tone and style of communication between the communication mediums that the rest of the organization uses and adopts, chat, Slack, email, documentation, presentations, and then the systemic communication engineering uses, Jira, Git, or Codebase, PRs, comments, our logs, audits, traces, and of course the visual and UI stuff. So if we can make sure that those don't end up too far out of sync, we'll end up with a common communication style, culture that is pervasive across the organization rather than it being us and them. So we've covered audiences, we've covered communication mediums, we've covered listening, I want to quickly go on to the different communication types then. And by types, I mean basically what is the mechanism we're using for talking. And some cases, we will be literally needing to talk to everybody, a broadcast. And that could be an all hands. It could be a department-wide organization that you need to talk to all at the same time. So broadcast communication has a particular style. There's very little in terms of interactivity in that it's one way. Almost all of the other forms of communication we have are two-way. We talked about systemic communication. We briefly touched on one-to-ones, how we run one-to-ones. But there's a couple of others that I think are worth touching on as well as CTO. So there's team meetings where we're, you know, either trying to reach an agreement decision or trying to communicate a decision. And then there are routine meetings. Routines are often things like stand-ups, retrospectives, weekly planning or sprint planning meetings. And routine meetings are something where they have great value to a number of the people who are in those meetings. But as a senior leader, you have to question whether you need to be in every single one of those. And if you are in them, how involved are you in those meetings? If you're too involved in those meetings or very involved in those meetings, then clearly you need to be there. And clearly that's something you can have a look at in terms of the priorities that you have in terms of your time during the week. But then also, if you can get to the point where you can delegate some of that communication, especially where you are a CTO with a set of leaders who report to you rather than individual contributors reporting to you, then being able to delegate those routine meetings to other people might help you with your time management, but it does give you a challenge then in terms of the communication and tone is now at one degree of separation from you. So people often talk about using skip level meetings, skip level one-to-ones, where you, rather than just the people who report directly to you, it's the people who report to them that you catch up with and talk to on a routine basis, probably not as frequently as the people who report directly to you, but enough so you can keep your finger on the pulse around the organization. So there's different types of meetings that we have as well. So I want to then just finish off before I go into my sort of playbook for general rules of communication with an example from very early in my career, because I think it highlights one other aspect of communication that comes up very rarely, but when it does, if it's done right, can be an absolute lifesaver. And that is the crisis. So I was working on a trading floor in an investment bank when 9/11 happened. So in recent memory, one of the biggest crises that has happened. And the reason it was such a crisis for the bank that I was working for at the time was because they had an office in New York, not that close to where the two towers came down, thankfully. It was a terrible tragedy that happened there. But enough that the trading was affected, that people were affected. And I remember at the time, because I was in for a lot of hours on that day, as were many other people in the organization, there was a very, very rapid response to it. Almost all of the, so on the trading floor, you have news being broadcast across the floor almost all the time. Almost all the news was switched over to the event almost immediately. There were very rapid tannoy announcements, so this loudspeakers over the whole floor announcing what was happening, who was in charge, which aspects were most important at a given time. There was very quick decision-making. There was a clear chain of command for how decisions were going to be taken. And when changes had to happen to that, because some people would suddenly find out that somebody they knew very well had been impacted by the changes to the towers and they would be, you know, unable to continue. And so there was a very rapid change process for swapping in somebody else who could take over from that point onwards. So there was very simple and easy communication to follow, clear and fast decision-making, and straightforward, uncomplicated goals. They were difficult to achieve, but there was no confusion about what was needed to be done. And switching modes to this kind of nothing else matters, this is the only thing that's important, and we're going to communicate to you really quickly and early in a crisis is something that I haven't seen as well done as that since then. And it's something that I think is a good lesson, because crises come up quite often, whether it's a full system outage, whether it's a platform that goes down. We've seen enough, you know, major cloud providers who have an entire region or zone or data center go offline. Crises happen that, if you know, affect the viability of a business often enough. Then there's the malicious types of hacking events, cybersecurity events that can be, you know, business threatening as well. Having a clear, straightforward, timely communication in a time of crisis can literally make the difference between a company surviving and it not. And the technology is almost always a key part of the crisis, for better or worse. And the only thing I can say is about crisis communication is to prepare for it. Most of it you can foresee if you think about it. And if you just think about the worst case scenario, what would happen, you can prepare for what you would do. And often, you know, any organization that has to go through any kind of security accreditation or compliance certification will have gone through some sort of business continuity planning. And that process is essentially the basis of crisis communication. What do you do if nobody can get to the office? What do you do if all of your prime systems go offline? What do you do if the business is losing money rapidly? Which bits do you switch off? Which bits do you communicate to who? And who says what? And what do you say to the press? Which is another key part that often, hopefully, doesn't fall on the CTO, but in a small organization, it might do. So preparation for crisis communication is one of the best things that you can do for that, such that when the worst happens, because it's often not if, it's when, you have something to fall back on and some principles to follow as that happens. So let's wrap up all that that I've talked about today, then see if we can come up with a slightly better version of that, the prime contractor announcement that I mentioned at the beginning. So in fact, let's do that first before I go into the playbook. So if we look at the prime contractor announcement, it sort of started off with, today we're announcing 5 changes to divisions, including 2 departmental mergers. If we were to try and fix that and change it so that A, we made it fairly clear up front that we have an agenda that we're going to be talking through, that we have listened to our people, we change the body language and the tonal delivery of it to represent some empathy with the people who are hearing this, to repeat the strategy. It's really important for to understand why the context of things going on is to repeat the strategy, to be clear, honest, and transparent about what's happening. So then the conversation, so the announcement might go something more like this. We need to make changes to succeed. We've listened and we want to improve. So in line with our primary mission, there are 5 changes in total, and some will mean job losses. There's about 100 roles are expected to go, leaving us just over 2,000 strong. For more information and to find out how you are affected, there'll be follow-on meetings in your department. Please talk to your team leader to find out when they are. Here are the changes that are happening, etc. So there, the change to it is having a lot more context at the beginning, a bit more empathy, some clarity, some honesty, which I think goes a long way, and then some transparency about what the impacts are immediately, along with how to find out more information. And I think that would probably have made that announcement, if not more palatable, then certainly more engaging and less distressing for the people who had received it. So for CTOs then, for technology leaders in general, what do I have as my sort of basic set of recommendations for communication? I think one of the general rules that for almost all leadership are to repeat the strategy, the vision, the mission, whichever of those three that you have, at pretty much every opportunity you have. You should get bored of repeating that. And if you get bored of repeating that, then you're probably just about beginning to be heard by the people who are hearing it. There's a statistic that we need to hear something 8 times before we really take it in. And so if we think about repeating our strategy to every person in an organization 8 times, however they might hear it, that's probably a lot of times to repeat it. And certainly a lot more than 8. Another general approach to take is to try and build communication into storytelling. And that takes practice. That takes a lot of practice. And I think I've struggled with this times as well. I think one of the best tips I ever had about turning communication into storytelling is to think about talking about the challenge and the solution from the point of view of a narrator, rather than from the point of view of the hero. So one person said it to me this way, right? If you're trying to think about Batman versus the Joker, you don't want to be telling everything from the Joker's position of, haha, everything's going wrong. You don't want to be telling everything from the Batman's position, I'm going to save the day. You want to be telling it from Alfred's perspective, where he's advising the hero how to do things. He's stating the facts, not under representing the challenge, but then also encouraging the hero that he can do it with these tools at his disposal, etc. And so if we think about storytelling from the point of view of Alfred, Batman's butler, rather than the point of view of either the hero or the villain, the problem, then we're probably on about the right path, and it takes practice. Another thing that's really crucial that people tell us all the time to build trust in our communication. How do we do that? With difficulty is a simple answer, but the few steps that I have for building trust would be to be transparent and honest wherever you can be. You can't always be transparent. And honesty, though, does tend to be fairly non-negotiable for building trust. Dishonesty will destroy trust fairly quickly. You can't always be as transparent as you want to be, but if you're at least honest about when you can't be transparent, then you're going to go quite a long way. Another way of building trust is to under-promise and over-deliver. That's harder than it sounds because we always want to be enthusiastic as a leader. We want to be able to be bullish and moving forwards. But if we set ourselves a target that's too high and we miss it, we undermine the trust that we built in people. And then the other aspect is what we spoke about before in terms of non-verbal cues, body language, eye contact, tone, our graphics and visuals, and including the backgrounds that are behind us, to making sure that they line up with the communication that we have. And then for CTOs in particular, there's a few things that go above and beyond that. I think one of them is, I'm going to repeat it again, because it's so important, is repeating the strategy that you have, being clear on your vision, clear on the strategy. And the strategy, normally when you talk to engineers, it comes at three levels. There's the company strategy, there's the product strategy, and then where you have it, where it's separate, there's a technical strategy or engineering strategy. And being able to articulate those and the right one at the right time is going to be important for CTOs to make sure that they get the why across to the whole of the engineering department. I've seen quite a lot of communication recently where people say, oh, but engineers don't need to understand why, don't need to understand that. What it does, though, it makes the decisions, and engineers make thousands of decisions every day, have a greater context, and it makes it easier for them to understand the reliability of the decisions that they're making. Another key thing for CTOs, I would say, is being aware of the audience that you're speaking to. CTOs especially jump from really high levels of abstraction, whether it's the board or the executive team, down to really detailed problems and solutions to challenges. And they span a huge range of abstraction. So being able to understand who your current audience is and step your communication up to the right level of abstraction, it's a practiced art, but one that's well worth spending time on. As well as the abstraction level, there is also the domain aspect as well. As engineers, as CTOs, we find ourselves crossing domains quite significantly from our engineering and technical domain through to the product domain. Normally those two are different. And then to the business domain as well, a third aspect. And so being able to translate comfortably across the different domains that we find ourselves working in will help our communication to be clearer, more concise, and to be understood in the attempt that it was in the way that it was intended to be delivered. Two tools that I find are very useful are analogies. So this is like that, the other is like this, and then metaphors, comparing something to something in a completely different domain with something that's relevant. So one of the things I often compare it to is building a car. Building an engineering product outcome is often like building a car. So we use metaphors to describe challenges that we're facing. I think the other thing that goes a long way then as well with CTOs to engineers, to especially when we're speaking, you know, down into the engineering organization, is to explain what has been learned or what has been understood. Because we'll often end up learning things as individuals or as small teams about either our customer domain, our problems that we're facing, the organization that we're working in, and we need to make that more widely understood. And so explaining what has been recently learned and what's been recently understood and what decisions have been taken based on that gives a good context and ground level to any other communication that we have. It's also something that if you do well and you can explain what's been learned or understood from the engineers to the leadership team, to the business or across to the other domains, can help people make better decisions in their work. And then last but not least, especially for people who are coming up to CTO role or to engineering leadership really relatively rapidly. As we are, you know, individual contributors or architects, we tend to be in the mode of coming up with the method. We come up with the how that we're going to do things. When we get to leadership, it's much more important for other people to figure out the how. That's why we have architects and engineers. It's much more important for us to state what. What is the outcome? What's the goal? What is it that we want to achieve? And leave everybody else to do the to do the method, to do the how, to state the goal, don't dictate the method. And it sounds really obvious to seasoned leaders, but it really isn't obvious to people who are stepping up to the CTO role, stepping up to leadership. So there you go. That's my rough playbook then for communication. Repeat the vision, the strategy, the mission as often as you possibly can. Use storytelling, but be the butler, not the hero. Build trust. Make sure you're aware and adaptive to who your audience are at any given time. Translate across to different domains using analogies and metaphors wherever you can. Be prepared for crisis so that you can communicate clearly and timely when a crisis hits. Explain what you've learned or understood from the rest of the organization. State the goal, don't dictate the method. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the CTO Playbook. Please go along to the website, join up for the community, and get access to even more resources. Until next time, keep leading with impact. Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.